Okay, we are on obviously part two of this particular section on leadership skills, and all of this is coming out of a book that Brother Wendell Winkler wrote on leadership, so this isn't something, at least these first nine lessons are not things that we have come up with, but just kind of presenting what he, Brother Winkler, had on leadership that he had put together after many years of experience. And so we're on numbers 4 through 8 this time, but I just wanted to go back briefly and just quickly see what was in 1 through 3 last week so we have a complete picture. But I know there's a lot in here that is dealing especially with elders. And so there's a lot of terminology in here about elders and what elders ought to do. But as we said from the get-go, there are principles throughout this that are beneficial for all of those in various leadership positions, even outside of the eldership, and even some folks in this class have made that comment, that the things that have been presented here, at least some of the principles, have been helpful in just some of the management positions that they have found themselves in. So I hope you found that to be true. Last week, you looked at leadership skill number one, and that is just having some personal skills, which is a good thing for leaders to have, such as loving their Bibles and having a prayer closet, having a meaningful devotional life, knowing God, having constantly undergoing a spiritual development process, living in the shadows of the cross and of God, and having lost their affection and attachment to the world so that they can be devoted to God. So we looked at those personal spiritual skills, and then if you're going to be a good leader, you got to have people skills. Some people are better at people skills than others. Perhaps you know some people that just completely lack people skills, and maybe they should go on Amazon and see if they can get some people skills on discount. But leaders need to be approachable. They need to be good listeners. They need to be kind and commiserating. They need to be respectful. They need to have a good sense of humor. They need to have faith in people and be observant. They need to have the proper concept of the congregation, have a genuine interest in the people they serve, and have an honest and transparent love for people. Again, what is that? How many is that? 11 different skills, being people skills. How many of those do we need in our everyday life? Not just application to elders. How many of those do we need just in our everyday life? And so I think that's especially helpful. And then last week, especially talking about elders, just talking about relational skills relating to their fellow elders, to the deacons, and to the preachers. And so we pick up on page 77 today with leadership skill number 4, and that is that it is important to have decision-making skills, being able to understand what's involved in making decisions. And so that's his first point there on letter A, is that leaders must understand what decision-making is. It's making up your mind that you're going to do something, that it's resolving a matter, it's determining a course of action. Again, with all of these, do some people have better decision-making skills than others? Do some folks struggle in making decisions? You know, one of my least, here's confession time on decision-making skills. You know one of my least favorite things to do is to go and buy a greeting card at the store. That is hard, because you go on the aisle and you got this whole aisle full of cards and you're supposed to pick one. When you talk about decision making, that's something that is, so end of confession time. But, you know, so some people struggle with decisions like choosing a card to buy for a random person for their birthday or something. But anyway, I have no idea why that came to mind. But here are some questions that Brother Winkler says are some that may be helpful in assisting in making decisions. Obviously, this first one is kind of the key. Is it scriptural? If the answer to that is no, then the decision's easy, right? If something's not scriptural, then it shouldn't be done. Will it promote growth? Will it help the congregation to grow? Number 3, will it be favorably received by the church? Now, let me ask you a question. Is that the only factor? Is that the only thing that matters? Let's see. Will this be favorably received by the church? Well, nope, it won't be favorably received, so we shouldn't do it. Well, is that always the thing that makes a decision on that? You know, if If it were left up to some, you can come in whatever door you want, Willie. I mean, front door, back door, man's all over the place. If it were left up to some congregations, would they ever, to some eldership, you know, if it has to go through this, always through this, is it going to be favorably received by the church? Have you ever heard of an eldership that let a preacher go, fired a preacher, letting him go is a nice way of saying it, but fired a preacher and the congregation got upset about it. It probably was the right decision in most cases, and yet there are some things that the congregation may not know, but do you have to run it through the prism of, well, the congregation won't like this, so we're not going to do it. How many congregations do you know of that practice withdrawal of fellowship? Not a lot. So do you always run it? Well, you know, the congregation is not going to respond to this very favorably, so we don't do it. Now, I'm not saying that this question doesn't come into play, but I'm saying it's not the only factor here. Number four, will it promote unity or will it promote division? Will it work here? That's an important question, because some things that work in other congregations don't work in all congregations. Some things that work up in the Bible Belt don't work in South Florida. Some of you have been part of congregations in multiple places, you know that. Some of the things that work in South Florida would never work in the Bible Belt. So you've got to see, is this something that's going to work here? Number six, do we have the talent? Do we have the resources? Do we have the facilities to start and to maintain such? In Luke chapter 14, Jesus talks about, the need to count the cost and to evaluate things before you get involved in it. Number seven, and we're going to come across this a few times in this lesson today, this concept. Do we have enough information to decide this? What an important thing to know about, to recognize. Do we have, just because you have some information, do you have all of the information? Do you have the accurate information? Maybe you don't have all of the proper information, the accurate information that you need to make a decision. Will it positively or adversely affect the church down the road? 6 months from now, you reap what you sow. What's the worst possible scenario? What would Jesus do? And then some of you were noting before class, even the next question, if Peter were an elder here, as he was in the New Testament, what would Peter do? And so just some questions perhaps to run through your mind on making good decisions. Page 78, top of the page. Leaders should prayerfully consider all of the pros and cons in making decisions. Now, if that's needful for leaders, do you ever do that in your own life? You say, okay, what's the best decision here? Should we leave Texas and move to South Florida and become a part of the Palm Beach Lakes congregation? Do you run pros and cons on that? Here's the pros. We get to be a part of the Palm Beach Lakes congregation. Here's the cons. Nope. All right. We're going to make this decision. We're going. You do that in your normal everyday life. Well, when you're an elder, do you all of a sudden leave that behind? Well, we won't run the pros and cons on this. Letter D, leaders should never make important decisions when they are in the valley. What does that mean? What does it mean to be in the valley? In a low state?
Depressed feelings.
Dealing with some depressed feelings? How would an eldership be in the valley? Okay. Can situations in congregations put a burden on the elders to where they can be kind of down in the valley? Why does he say not to make important decisions while you're down in the valley? Okay. Okay. So this only applies if you're an elder, right? If you're just a normal everyday person, I guess elders aren't normal everyday persons. But if you're a normal everyday person and you're making some major decisions, is it good to make those decisions when you're down in the valley, down in the dumps? No, because you might not be making the best decision for you at that moment. So just look, recognize where you are and what's going on and the ramifications of those decisions. Letter E. Leaders should not have to wait until they go home to make a decision. I have heard of and read of stories sometimes in congregations where certain elder wouldn't vote on a certain matter until, well, you know, I just need to think on this for a while. That was code for, I need to go home and talk to my wife and see what my wife thinks about this. Is that a good practice? Again, not that a godly wife would not have a good perspective on some certain things, but who's the elder? And in fact, there have been some congregations, even as he has under here, that have had an elder's wife who was rather dominant, who kind of made some of the decisions, not just for her husband, but even for the eldership, and kind of influenced them as a whole. So good to have sound advice, whether it be from your own wife or from others, but the elders are the ones who've got to make those decisions. Letter F, leaders, as they make decisions, must never be ruled by a minority in the church or a minority in the eldership. He says, otherwise, extremism governs. What does that mean? Must never be ruled by a smaller group, maybe by a disgruntled group, maybe by individuals that don't represent the whole congregation. Would that be a big deal? He doesn't have the verse on here, but in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, it indicates that this brother that had Paul had addressed in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, this brother who had taken his father's wife, and Paul tells him in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 to withdraw fellowship from him. It indicates to us in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 that a majority of the church had withdrawn fellowship from him. What does that imply about the others? And there was if the majority withdrew fellowship from him, what does that indicate? Not everybody did. There was a minority, there was a smaller group in the congregation that did not. Well, who did the favor for the brother who had been withdrawn from? The majority. And so elders need to be mindful of those groups that may not be mindful of the proper direction and the way things need to go. John, was that your hand? Or?
Yeah, I was just going to say that kind of cuts both ways. Look at Joshua and Caleb.
Correct. And that's, he's going to have... look down here. Let me drop down because I think that's an interesting comment. Look on letter H, and we'll come back and you can fill in letter G. But look down on letter H because these go together, and it's interesting you bring that up. Leaders must be independent thinkers in the decision-making process. And then, once they've been independent thinkers, cooperatively abide by the decision of the majority. What was going on with Joshua and Caleb? Were they in the majority or were they in the minority? They were in the minority. Now, of the 12 spies who went into the Canaan, how many of them came back and said, "This is a land flowing with milk and honey. It's a beautiful place." How many of the 12 said that? It's a trick question. All 12 said that. All 12 said, "It is a land flowing with milk and honey." All 12 said, "It's exactly the way God described it." Now, although that was a common evaluation, what did the others... Then you've got the split on, okay, should we go and take it? And so you have the majority there saying that we shouldn't, and they melted the heart of the people and discouraged everybody in the process. You've got a minority in Joshua and Caleb in that situation. But what's the difference here? The difference was... you've got a majority that are going down a sinful path. Is that true? You've got 10 spies that are leading the majority of the people. Are they leading them down a sinful path? Well, yeah, because God said go and do it. And what are the 10 saying? Yep. Well, we're not going to do it. Well, that's sinful to not do what God says. You've got the minority saying we're going to... And what is it? The description about Caleb is he wholly, W-H-O-L-L-Y, he wholly followed the Lord. Well, those are the ones, those are the individuals that we need to follow. But think about this. They need to be independent thinkers, which means that each elder needs to be an independent thinker in the process. And as he says under that, there's no place for a yes man within that, which just means that the verses there in the book of Proverbs are those verses that talk about the multitude of counselors. If you want to receive wise counsel, if you're trying to make a decision and you want to receive wise counsel. And I'm not talking about elders. I'm just talking about individuals in general who are trying to make a decision, and you want to receive wise counsel. Should you ask more than one person, what they think you ought, the decision you ought to make? Should you ask more than one person, or just ask the one person who you think is going to tell you what you want to hear? Is that a good idea? Is it good to ask multiple counselors, as those verses in Proverbs talk about? And maybe ask some people who might tell you some things you don't want to hear. And maybe to give you a different perspective. And that's this idea of asking some independent thinkers. That's needed, but it's interesting. And this concept's going to come up again in just a minute. But then cooperatively abide by the decision of the majority. Once a decision has been made, the eldership, and we'll see this exact line in just a minute, but the eldership walks out of that room united and going with that decision that has been made. Go to page 79. There's a lot more to say there, but I've got more pages I've got to get to. Letter I on the top of page 79. Another contrast here. Leaders must not be hasty in making decisions. But on the other hand, they must not practice procrastination. They need to make a decision, but not drag too long. It's interesting, the verse he's got, and the verse isn't up here, it's on your handout, 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 21, where you have Elijah saying, how long are you going to falter between these two opinions? You got to make a decision here. Letter J, leaders must resolve to live with their decisions. Have you ever second-guessed a decision you made before? You made a decision and then you just kicked yourself, second guess. If you saturate your decisions with prayer, you saturate your decisions with seeking wise counsel, then you've got to go on and know that God is going to take care of you regardless of what that is. And then the final one on here, leaders must adopt some guidelines for decision making, and that's what this whole series of points is about. And this is again where he says when the eldership leaves the room, they leave united. In other words, there may have been discussion among the elders on a particular matter. There may have even been some disagreement or some different views voiced inside of an elders meeting. But once a decision is made on something, who's going to know which elder wanted something, or who's going to know if there was a particular elder who thought differently than what the decision was? Not outside of the room. Because when an eldership makes a decision, the eldership makes the decision, and they are all a part of that. So this is just in the context of what's a skill that a good leader needs to have, decision-making skills. Any comments, thoughts on decision-making skills? All right, you had your chance. You got to jump in fast, all right? It's like jumping in the pool. You know, when you know it's cold, you just got to jump in, right? If you put your foot in and say, well, this is kind of cold, that's not going to work. If you want in, you got to get in. Number five, good skill for leaders to have, communication skills. You think this might apply to marriage? You think this might apply to relationships in general? So communication flows in how many directions? Both directions. In two directions. And this is involved in the church. Elders communicate with the church. The church communicates back to the elders. I like his concept of communication here. The two most important letters in the word communication are I-C. Communication is enabling and is helping people to see things. Isn't that true? You know, when you're communicating with your children, what's the purpose? You're trying to help them to see your perspective, to see the right decision that they need to make. And the same is true in marriage, same is true in your workplace. Communication helps everybody to see what's going on. And that's the point he's making at the top of page 80. Is good communication involves letting people know what's going on. We've made this statement. All of this is from Brother Wendell Winkler's material. This isn't stuff that's been put together that's been pointed at our elders at all. I'm thankful for our elders who I believe communicate well with our congregation. I know of some elderships in other places that that, in my opinion, were kind of over-communicating in some cases. And then I know of a lot of elderships that under-communicate. But I think we've kind of got, should I even say this? I think we've kind of got the Goldilocks thing going on with our, it's, you know what I'm saying by that? It's just right. You remember Goldilocks, right? You know, this bed is too soft, this bed is too hard, this bed is just right, you know? And so I think we've got that here in this congregation as far as communication goes, not concerning beds or porridge or anything like that, but concerning communication, I think our elders are doing it just right, and I'm thankful for that. So look at some attributes of good communication. Good communication possesses a good and a positive attitude. Now, does this have anything to do with you in your daily life? I mean, this isn't just talking about elders, right? If you want to be a good communicator, do you need a good positive attitude? Do you know anybody in your workplace that's not a good communicator because they've got a lousy attitude? Okay, I'm just limiting it to the workplace and not to any other relationships that might be too personal right now. Remember that actions speak louder than words. Does that apply to every part of our life? Work at being active listeners. Why does he put the word active in front of listeners? What does that mean? To be an active listener? Okay, active listeners ask questions. What does it mean by active listener? You know, sometimes we think being a listener means, well, I'm being quiet while you're talking. Is that a listener? Not necessarily. If I'm quiet while you're talking, I may not be listening at all. I may be thinking, what am I going to say when this dumb person is done talking? You know, I may not be listening at all. So active listening means I'm actually listening to what this person is saying, considering what they're saying, not just thinking about how I'm going to respond, and looking at, and as Phil said, maybe saying, okay, what do you mean by this? What, you know, I hear you saying this. Is this what you mean by this? Sherilyn and then Willie. God gave you 2 ears and one mouth. Absolutely. It's got to be some reason for that. Willie, you were going to say the exact same thing, weren't you, Willie?
Just about.
Oh, okay.
it's like a prayer, following a prayer. You're repeating the words that are being spoken. You're actively listening to being a part of what's being said.
Yeah. And so does that take energy? I mean, it's easy just to sit and listen to somebody or at least be quiet while they're but active listening involves being engaged. Number four, choose words very carefully. Now, does that have any application outside of an eldership? Choose your words very carefully. Be completely honest and never respond critically. What does he mean by that? Never respond critically. Does that mean you can't disagree with somebody? Is that what that means? Never respond critically. Can you disagree with somebody without being disagreeable? Okay. So if I disagree with somebody in a disagreeable manner, somebody says something that I don't particularly like, and I say, boy, you're as dumb as a box of rocks. Let me tell you what's going on and why you shouldn't believe what you think. Is that being critical? Oh, just a smidgen. But can I respond in a way that is disagreeing with somebody, but still have, number one, a good and positive attitude? Yeah, that is not. Do I have to call the person's mindset, their character, their goodwill into question? Not in that process. There's a variety of ways that leaders can communicate, and we've got to skip over that just because of time. You can read through those. You can read through those on your own. Anybody got any thoughts on communication skills? All right, you didn't jump in. Number six, problem-solving skills. This might work in some other relationships, right? Having problem-solving skills. He's got a couple examples here. Did Moses deal with any problems? Yeah, like a couple million of them, right? And they all had different names. Can you imagine, he says, being an elder in the church at Corinth? That would have been a breeze, right? I mean, that would have been super easy, being an elder in the church at Corinth. He's got the example of Brother Gus Nichols here, and this has been mentioned here over the years. But these three questions that Brother Nichols asked are key questions in dealing with problems, dealing with situations that are going to come up. If somebody comes to you and wants your advice or wants your counsel on something, these are These are three good questions to ask. First, do you want to do right? What if they say no? Yeah, okay, we're done. I mean, we're just not going anywhere with this. Number two, all right, you answered yes to the first one. Do you want to do right now? Well, I'm not really sure. Okay, then we're done. If you're not interested in doing right and doing right now, then this is over. Number three, are you willing to let the Bible decide what's right? And if it's yes, yes, and yes, okay, we can talk, we can deal with this because you're willing to talk about what the Bible says and allow the Bible to define what's right, and you want to do what it says right now. So good questions to ask in a problem-solving situation. So here are some practical suggestions that Brother Winkler has for problem-solving. Number one, or letter A, or whatever you have, I can't remember what you've got. Do not talk the problem to death. Have you ever done that? Have you ever known anybody else to talk a problem to death? You thought, man, I feel sorry for that problem. I didn't even realize it was that big of a problem, but it's worse than I thought. Number two, collect all of the facts available. Again, does that have application outside of an eldership? Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 13 is the verse that says, he who answers a matter before he hears it, it's folly and shame to him. Is it good for me to tell somebody what to do if I don't have all of the information? If I have some of the facts, does that mean I have all of the facts? You all are turning the page, but the bottom says, be sure of the facts before proceeding. So make sure you've actually got the facts. Cultivate a keen listening ear. Again, being an active listener. Perfect the fine art of kindly asking, penetrating, and revealing questions. This is what Phil was talking about, but Brother Winkler calls it the fine art. Can you ask penetrating and revealing questions, but not perfect the fine art of doing it? How do you perfect the fine? How do you not be nosy and hurtful, but ask somebody questions that are a little bit intrusive? How do you do that? You've got to develop a compassionate heart. They need to recognize that the tone that you are using, you've got to make sure you're measuring your words, measuring your tone. You need to make sure that you're coming across as genuine in your desire and your effort to help, and just make sure that it is full of compassion. You need to be expeditious, not hasty. Letter or number, whatever this is. Number seven, do not forget that wisdom may be had for the asking. What did James say? He who lacks wisdom, where does he go? Let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally. Exercise absolute impartiality and objectivity. Here I am trying to solve a problem. What do I need to be? I need to be impartial. Is it hard to be impartial? Well, that's tough sometimes. But if I'm going to be objective, if I'm actually going to help solve a problem, I can't choose sides. I can't choose, you know, the one that I like the best. Sometimes when people come to me for marriage counseling, I will tell the husband, I'm not on your side. I'll tell the wife, I'm not on your side. I'm not either one of your sides. I'm on the side of your marriage. Or if they have children, I'm on the side of your children. But exercise absolute impartiality. Number, what are we on? Nine. Maintain confidentiality. How important is that, to maintain confidentiality? That verse in Proverbs is one of the verses that talks about being a talebearer. And he's not talking about picking up Eeyore's tail and carrying Eeyore's tail for him. This is obviously talking about somebody who's being a little bit of a gossip and carrying around some information and some stories and telling others. But he says at the end of that verse, he who has a faithful spirit conceals a matter. We need to be confidential in that regard. Ordinarily, he says two elders are better than one, and that's just in problem-solving skills, not in how many are appointed. Seek the advice, he says, of non-related and unacquainted sources, usually other elders and preachers. I won't get into that. Sometimes referral for professional help is the best solution. And oftentimes, if there is professional help needed, that's exactly where it needs to go. And then he's got 10 sources sometimes from where problems come. But obviously, you could double or triple that list Letter D, problem-solving skills in the early church. How much time do we have? Barely enough. Let me just put all of these up here. You know this situation, right? Over in Acts chapter 6, what was the problem? Tell me the problem in Acts chapter 6 in the early church. The Grecian widows were being neglected. All right, so that problem is brought to the apostles. And the apostles say, that's not our problem. Because we're Jews and they're Grecian widows. And so take your, you know, we hear your problem, but just drop that in the problem, write it down, drop it at the box at the back of the auditorium, and we'll have the Grecian brethren when they come to town to open the box and look inside. Is that what the apostles did? Nope. All right, we're going to solve this problem. How did they solve the problem? Well, they said, we've got a problem. They didn't just dismiss it and say, well, that's not our problem. You know, that's their, we've got a problem. You have on number two there. They smothered, verse number four, they smothered the problem with a mantle of kind generosity. We're going to take care of this. They did not allow the problem to detract from their primary work. Is that easy? Is it just in everyday life, is it easy to allow problems to detract you from what you actually need to be doing? Sometimes we just want them to come along, right? I don't actually want to be working today, right? And so I'm just going to let some distraction come along and deviate my thought process. The apostles delegated, didn't they? They needed to take care of their of the things that were assigned to them, but they delegated what was needed. They smothered the problem with prayer, to use that same word from above. Prayer accompanied their actions, and then their problem solving contributed to the continued growth of the church. You see in verse 7 that while there was a problem in the church, they dealt with it, and the church kept growing. So again, there's a lot there, a lot of skills, a lot of principles to be involved in solving our problems. Anybody got any thoughts on problem solving and having those skills in everyday life, but for sure as leaders in the church? Number 7, bottom of page 83, time management skills. Are these skills needed outside of an eldership? Anybody need time management skills? That's all of us, isn't it? Time management for leaders in their personal lives. They need to take time for their wives, for their children, for their own personal spiritual enrichment. You might think that it's just obvious that elders and preachers spend a lot of time in their own personal spiritual enrichment, and they're always just studying the Bible. But do you know how easy it is to get involved in so many other things that you don't spend time in your own personal growth? And so that needs special attention. Number B, time management for shepherding. So they need to manage their time for their own personal lives, but they need to spend some time management for shepherding. And look at his suggestions here. Make short, meaningful telephone calls. Now, he wrote this before text messages were a thing. But make short, meaningful telephone calls. Now, just because text messages are a thing doesn't mean that telephone calls aren't needed. Can a telephone call be more personal than a text message? Usually is, isn't it? Have you ever got a text message from somebody and you thought, that's kind of nice, but that almost seems like it was written for somebody else? You know, that's kind of nice, but I don't know if that was written for me. That seems like maybe it was a copy paste and they just dropped that. Oh, that's kind of, but a phone call, can you copy paste a phone call? I mean, AI is going to make that possible here real soon, where you can just, you know, you can just drop that in and it can call and make it sound like it's really you talking. Anyway, personal conversation. Number two, write one short note per day to encourage somebody. Number three, use the time before and after services to your advantage. Number four, use Sunday afternoons to visit. Number five, employ luncheon meetings. Number six, host after-service fellowship times for various groups. Number seven, reserve one night per week to go out among the sheep. And if retired, number eight, dedicate one whole day to going around and visiting. And I'm thankful that our retired elders have been doing that for a long time. Letter C, time management for conducting and attending meetings. Number one, don't meet just to meet. Number two, have a printed agenda distributed several days before the meeting. Number three, avoid the extraneous in discussions. Number four, keep the meeting moving. Number five, know when to cut off discussion. Number six, stay within reasonable time restraints. Number seven, employ the decision-making skills that are part of this particular study. Number eight, when a decision is apparently on, and when apparently not on the horizon, table the matter. Number nine, avoid procrastinating decision-making, which will keep adding to the agenda. Number 10, when a decision is reached, relegate such to the elder responsible for such matters for his immediate action. And number 11, when a decision is made, it's made. Let it be made. And again, back to that point before, don't second guess. And then he talks about some time robbers and lists several things that are involved there that can rob you of time. Now, does any of this apply to us who are not elders? Are there time robbers in our lives? Can some of these things, you know, disorganization and procrastination, I don't like the cluttered workspaces. I almost left that off because I'm like, that's personally offensive to me. But I don't consider my space cluttered, but some people would. But are there things that rob us of our time on a personal, on a daily basis, that can cause us to not be as effective as we should be? I know I ran through all that. Time management's tough. It's something that I think all of us could work on and be more effective in. Final thing he's got. We've got 4 minutes for this. Organization skills. So he's dealt with a lot of different skills here. But to be effective as a leader, you need to have good organization skills. Look at some of the verses. I don't know if you recognize some of the passages he has here. We already talked about Acts chapter 6. 1 Corinthians chapter 12 is where he talks about the church as being a body. Exodus chapter 18, remember what that's about? That's about Moses and Moses taking on too much and needing to delegate and organize the people. Joshua chapters, the early chapters of Joshua, what was being organized? The taking of the city of Jericho. Judges chapter 7 was about Gideon going up against the Midianites. And how many men were in Gideon's army? 300. You think he needed to be organized to take 300 against the Midianites? He was well organized. And then 1 Chronicles chapter 18 is about David and how he had divided up the various responsibilities within his reign. So there's a lot of emphasis in the Bible on being well organized. And so one of the names given to elders is that they are overseers. And at the top of page 86, you have that definition of what an overseer is, at least the definition of that Greek word. It's a man who's been charged with the duty of seeing that things are done by others rightly. And that's a big responsibility. So let me share these last blanks with you. Got a couple minutes. What do organizational skills involve? Number one, you've got to analyze the situation. You got to step back, look at what's going on, and make sure you've got all of the information that you need in this process. Number two, you need to visualize what can be done. Again, does this apply to anybody, not just elders? Visualize what can be done. I was taught to do that in basketball. You know, you visualize, taught to do that in baseball. You know, you visualize, you know, even when you're standing in the batter's circle and you're visualizing that pitch. Anyway, this applies to all sorts of life. Analyze situation, visualize what can be done. Number three, organize the ways and means to get the job done. All right, here's what we need to do. Here's how it can be done. Now let's organize this and make sure it's done in the right way. And obviously he's rhyming everything in case you hadn't caught on to that. You got to deputize. That doesn't mean you put a badge on somebody, but it just means you appoint somebody to the function that they need to have in order to get this done. Number five, you need to climatize the church. What does that mean? Tell them what's going on. Ask for help. Motivate them to get involved. Number six, energize those that have been delegated to serve. Encourage them, build them up in what they're doing. Number seven, supervise by keeping a constant vigil on what is happening. And then when appropriate and timely, recognize the efforts of the workers And there's a lot of points that could be made about all of those, obviously. He gives some constructive suggestions here on making sure you keep things organized. And what it just involves making sure you've got the proper resources in the proper places being done and overseen by the proper people. I like what he says on number four, avoid starting too many things at once. Make sure you're able to handle the things that are done. Number six, keep the organized program as simple as possible. And then the last thing he says is just periodically evaluate, add, subtract, and reassign. I know sometimes these classes feel like you're drinking out of a fire hose, right? But hopefully as you look at these, there's some benefit to the things we're talking about. Hopefully you can go back and look over the notes afterwards and benefit from them later on. Anybody got any final comments on organizational skills that are involved in being a good leader? All right. Thank you all very much for being here this afternoon.